Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peep State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peep State Pandemonium.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. Welcome to Peep State Pandemonium for Thursday, August 8th of 2013. This is Michael Norris, and I am joined by one of my lovely co-hosts, Gentleman Jerry Oates. Our tag team partner is sitting in the upper tier at the Georgia Dome trying to make the Falcons win. I can see him now, Jerry. He's sitting there in his chair. He's got his binoculars around his neck, and he's looking through them. He's got his earphones on, so he can listen to it on the radio, and he's probably got a portable TV in his lap.
I wouldn't doubt any of that.
Like I told you before, he's like a lovesick puppy. He just, no matter how many times they break his heart, he keeps going back.
All those people up there keep going back for more. I don't understand.
Oh, man. Well, I apologize for us not being on the air last week. I think the NSA has been listening in, and they knocked us off the air last week.
Evidently.
And, of course, this is my first time back after 3 weeks. I want to thank Rich Tate for filling in for me 2 weeks ago. And I know you guys talked about the Georgia Wrestling History Hall of Fame, and I have one exception to that, one complaint. I should be on the ballot somewhere for the worst person who ever worked a match on PBS. I mean, I figure it's just me. The competition is just me and the poor guy that Bruiser Brody put in a wheelchair, and I don't even remember his name, so I figured I'm a shoo-in. I don't even know if they ever gave his name. And I know he tore out of there as quick as he could get dressed and get out of there. So they may not have ever even paid the poor guy. Oh, man. What a mess. Well,
Before we get started, I'd like to thank Scott Teal. He sent me a nice poster that he did for me when I wrestled Harley in New Orleans. And it was a shock when I got that in the mail. It was gorgeous. I'd just like to thank him, and of course I sent him a thank you message, but that was so kind of him to do that, and I just really thank him for doing that.
Scott does a lot of things like that with posters. I know every year when he does his reunion, he comes up with something that he puts up on display there, like he'll have Skull Von Stroheim versus Skull Murphy, loser must grow hair match or something like that. He does all kind of little crazy things and neat posters. I lost him in the fire, but I had, he put together, it's probably been long enough, 4 or 5 years ago, I guess, some posters of various masked men. And I helped him out a little bit with some of the photos that he used. And so he sent me three copies, he did three different versions because he had that many to do. And, I had them in my room, and of course I lost them in the fire. So, but he does a lot of things. If you go on his website, Crowbar Press, or whateverhappenedto.com, I'm not sure which is the right one. He can probably reach it either way. But he's got all kinds of posters that he's done over the years.
How much memorabilia did you lose in the fire, Mike?
Well, I lost those posters. I lost probably 20 to 30 magazines ranging from 1950 to 1973, I think. Lost all those. I lost probably 300 or 400 photos. But luckily those I had already scanned and I had on a separate hard drive, an external hard drive. So I've got those. I just don't have the original versions of them anymore.
Right.
All of my books, with the exception of the ones that I had loaned to Bill Bowman, I loaned him probably five or six, but all the books I had Terry Funk's book, I had Ole's book, I had J.J. Dillon's book, I had Harley's book, Moolah's, just a ton of books, probably 15, 20, maybe more of that I lost. Luckily, I was able to save all of my newspaper clippings that I've had been collecting over the years. I had 12 binders full of those. Those weren't damaged, so they were able to get those out and try and clean up the binders and everything. I've got all those boxes in there at my aunt's house. But that's pretty much I lost a mask that I had made. It was in my luggage in the living room, and it you couldn't even see where what was luggage. It was all gone.
No, sure.
But all of my wrestling gear and my Gulf Coast Tag Team belt, well, the Gulf Coast Tag Team belt I had with me that weekend because I was going to let Kelly put it in his little Hall of Fame that he built out there at the barn, and wound up we didn't have room for it, so it was riding around in the trunk of my car. And all my gear, butcher tights and boots and ring jackets I had left, they were in my storage facility in a suitcase. So all that was, so of course, I haven't looked at them in 6 or 7 years. They may all be mildewed by now, but I didn't lose those. So, but it's, you know, it's all stuff that can be replaced with the exception of clippings. I'm glad because I spent weeks, hours, in various libraries trying to get those. And then there again, Scott Till helped me out with a lot of that because he had a lot of the clippings that I didn't have for Mobile. And luckily I was able to salvage all those, except for the books that he'd loaned me from the clipping results from the 30s and 40s that he had done over the years for Mobile. He had given me copies of the books that he'd done. And those were with my magazines. I lost all those. And I had probably 20, 25 copies of Scott's Whatever Happened To, which I know he's hesitant about starting that back. He wants to, but it's a lot of time and energy, and he doesn't make a whole lot of money off them. But those were some great little magazines that he put together.
They were. They really were. They're really interesting.
And he is... he's talked about doing them again at some point, but with everything else he's got going on, I think he just finished and has just released the updated version of Briscoe, which is a book I want. Now that he's updated it, I'll probably get it from him because when it came out several years ago, I never could find a copy of it anywhere. And but now that he's kind of edited and updated it like he did with Fez's book, Hooker, which I need to get an updated version of that as well. But until I have a home to have stuff sent to, it's kind of hard to do that. But at some point I will. At some point I will. And also, I just want to miss, I know you guys talked about a couple of weeks ago when Rich was on, Tinker Todd and Tom Schaff had passed away. But since that show was done, we lost Newt Tatry. And for those of you who don't recognize that name, he worked under his name was Newton Tatry. He worked under the name of Newton Tatry in Calgary in the early to mid 60s. He worked as Tony Skunkman Newberry in Toronto in the late 50s, early 60s, which was he put a streak in his hair like Sputnik. So it was kind of a Canadian version of Sputnik Monroe. But he was best known as Guido Mongol. The Mongols with Nikolai Volkov as Beppo and later on Bill Eady is Polo. And he actually died early in July, but his wife had him buried and didn't tell anybody until he'd been buried a couple of weeks. She just found out that he had actually he was 82 or 84.
Really?
Yeah. Now, did you work with him, probably in the Carolinas or maybe Georgia?
No, I never worked with him.
Because I know they came through, he and Nikolai came through Georgia just before the split. And I think Bobby told me they never worked for Ann, but then they went.
I worked with Nikolai when he was one of the Mongols.
Well, that was by himself?
Yeah.
Okay. He was there in Georgia by himself, too. And then I think Guido had a short run by himself. But they mainly worked up around Buffalo. They worked in Pittsburgh for quite a while. They worked in New York in the early 70s. And I think the last run with Bill Eady, they worked for Eddie Einhorn for the IWA, and then they worked in the Carolinas. And then after they split, Eady went overnight, literally overnight, from Bolo Mongo to the Mass Superstore. Nobody knew that it was the same person because he totally changed his look, his working style and everything. But Guido, he was around a long time. He trained a lot of people. He trained Larry Zbysko. He trained John L. Sullivan, who later became Johnny Valiant, and Johnny DeFazio, which was a local guy that was a big name up around Pittsburgh. And he actually, you know, Bruno owned Pittsburgh at one time. He had the promotion. It was called Tri-States. And when he decided to get out of the promotion of it, he sold it to Guido. And he was, I don't know how long he ran after that, probably a couple of years or so before it finally folded up. But he was, like I said, his wife didn't let nobody know that he was gone until he was buried for a couple of weeks. No, and then we also lost, I'm drawing a blank now.
Dutch Savage,
yes, who had been sick for quite a while. He had had a series of mini strokes and everything. And, of course, we had Dutch on the show with us two and a half years ago. And what a nice guy. And I know you work with him because you spend so much time in Portland.
Right.
He was seemed like a great guy. Had a lot of good stories to tell.
Yeah, he did. He really did.
But I hated that, but it was kind of somewhat expected of him because after he had been hospitalized a couple of months ago, he just never fully recovered. And of course, we lost him. He was 78, so he wasn't as old as I thought he was. I thought he was a little older than that. And some good news, bad news, or bad news, good news, I should say. Our friend Bill Bowman is in the hospital. He's got fluid around his heart, and he's got a problem with one of his legs, which is probably related, vascular-wise. But I spoke to him this afternoon, and he's in good spirits and doing much better than he was when they put him in the hospital, obviously, but his son was there with him, and they're hoping for him to go home tomorrow the next day. So everybody keep Bill in your thoughts and prayers. He's a fighter. He's a fighter. But and that's all I know as far as illnesses and whatnot. So I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, I got some questions to ask you about your traveling days, so I'll ask you those when we get back. We'll take a quick break real quick.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows, to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first party you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Thinking about it, I'll have to get with Scott, and we'll have to dig up that date in Columbus with you and the McGuire twins against the Garvins and have him make.
I don't want a poster of that. I hope he's listening.
You put them side by side.
Him.
The highlight of your career and the loss.
I thank him so much for the one he sent, but I don't know who cares, right?
Oh man. The Garvins against Oates and the McGuire twins. Oh, man. Oh, come on, Greg. You know you'd like to love to have that and have it framed and hanging in your living room.
Oh.
Hang it over the fireplace.
Maybe it'll fall in the fireplace.
Do you have a game room you can use it as a dartboard?
Oh, you hang it in your office down there on Tybee Island. They're all the boys.
Yeah, why not?
Oh, man.
Sensation piece, wasn't it?
The one with Harley, where was that from? Kansas City or New Orleans?
New Orleans.
Okay. Superdome card?
Yeah.
Oh, I bet that was a thrill. Do you remember how many people was there, crowd-wise?
I don't remember. That was I just couldn't believe when I opened that poster up. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Couldn't believe it.
Well, that kind of leads into what I was going to ask you. I know you worked several different territories, and they all had the bookers and promoters there all had varying styles of how they wanted their matches to be performed and everything. And I know you're for the main. Or you were known as a good mat wrestler who could do, you know, the high-flying stuff, too. Were you ever asked, I know you never healed except for your times in Japan, but were you ever asked to alter your style at all at any various territories you worked in?
No, I never was. Never.
That's amazing. I mean, because you compare Portland to, say, Georgia. Georgia was very much mat-based. And Portland was kind of the wild and woolly stuff, wasn't it?
When I got there, it was pretty much like Georgia, and the guys that were there, you know, Waskowski was there, Buddy Rose was there, Snooker was there, Ventura was there. It wasn't that much difference, really. It really wasn't.
What about Kansas?
Nearly everywhere I went. It wasn't that much different, really.
Really? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's because you never went to Tennessee.
No, sir.
You never had to do chain matches and scalpel matches. And
we need the matches.
Now, we can't blame that on Tennessee.
No.
I think that originated all that garbage stuff from Japan where they did barbed wire and light bulbs and thumbtacks and all that crazy stuff. Oh, man.
I cannot imagine. So were you ever approached by anywhere you worked about turning heel?
I tried to in Louisiana. Watts
really?
Wouldn't let me. Yeah. I wanted to. But he wouldn't let me.
Who'd you want to work a program with as a heel?
I don't know. I just wanted to switch. You know, I'd been there a year, and I talked to him about it, and he said, no. But I was top babyface when I was there, and you know, I was working with Murdoch, I was working with Cox, John Tolis, Eric the Red. We had a good crew there, man. We really did. You know, as far as trips, you know, I had never been there, but I always heard about the trips. But when I got there, you know, I really didn't mind the trips because, you know, Bill, he flew me out there, you know, and, you know, I'd always said, I'd never go there. That's one thing you should never say, I'll never do something. So he talked me into coming. He said, I'll fly you out here. I talked to him on like a Wednesday. He said, just let me fly you out here and do two TVs for me on Saturday, and I'll fly you back. And he said, just get a feel of, you know, what we do. And so I went, and he gave me a starting date 2 weeks later, and I went. And the trips, I mean, they were what they advertised, you know. But I don't know. I was young, and it didn't bother me. They didn't bother me. They really, I was gone a lot, you know, gone from home a lot. But, you know, you start out on Monday, which I lived in Shreveport. A lot of guys lived in Baton Rouge, but I kind of split the difference because I worked up north more than I did down south. You know,
I was going to say, this was actually from McGurk, right? Watts was booking, but Leroy McGurk was the promoter.
No, Watts had it, but Leroy was still around.
This was after they split?
Leroy was still around.
Okay.
Because the first time I met him, I met him at the office in Tulsa, and Bill introduced me to him, and he felt my face, you know.
Mm.
Kind of, I guess, see what I look like or something, you know. And but you know, Monday would start out, I'd be in Tulsa, and that was 350 miles up and 350 back. So that's 700 miles first day.
Yeah.
And then normally I was in Shreveport on Tuesday. That's where I live. And which was okay. And then Wednesday we would do interviews on Wednesday. And then Wednesday night we would be in Jackson, Mississippi. And then we'd leave Jackson on Wednesday night and drive to New Orleans. We'd be in New Orleans on Thursday. And then Friday night, we would be in Lafayette, Louisiana. And then if we had TV, we had to go back to Shreveport Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know.
Where did they take TV? Was it at the Irish McNeil Boys Club already? Or was
no.
It at
we did the TV station.
Okay. So I'm just trying to narrow down, because that was before Watts totally split off and started Mid-South then.
Right.
Okay.
And then,
that was in 78 or 79, somewhere along in that,
right,
that time frame.
And then Saturday night, you could be back in La Ronja. That was 330 miles back down south. And then Sunday night, you could be in Houma, Louisiana. And then if you were back in Tulsa on Monday, from Houma to Tulsa was 700 miles.
Yeah.
So I would drive back to Shreveport, get in at like 4 o'clock in the morning, spend the night, you know, get back home, then leave about 12:30 to go to Tulsa again. And we hadn't even hit Oklahoma City or Little Rock or any of those
Wichita,
places
yet. Wichita, those places.
But, you know, they didn't run that when I was there.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, McGurk had lost a lot of that during Watts' time, you know, because Watts left there and went into Florida and bought into Florida, bought into Georgia, and stayed on that end for during the split for the bulk of 2 years, and then he went back to Oklahoma and kind of under the condition of McGurk letting him buy points in the Tulsa office or Oklahoma City, wherever they were based at the time. And a lot of things changed. I think by that time, Danny Hodge was out of the picture because he had his car wreck. And
yeah,
Watson,
I never
Danny
saw
Hodge
Danny
the
when
two
I was
biggest
there.
Stars. Yeah. Yeah, like that. And so there was a lot of influx. And they'd gone away from a lot of the older junior heavyweights, which is what McGurk always pushed.
Right.
And so they were getting into bigger guys like Cox, Murdoch, yourself. And then I think Watts kind of expanded, even though they ran into Louisiana. Watts kind of expanded it more and more or less took over that venue. Now in Jackson, where was it, the Culkins still there?
They were still there, right.
They were the local promoters there? Yeah.
Right. And then we would not on a regular basis, but we would hit Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Right, which is where they were. That's where they were based. The Culkins were.
Right.
They were always from Vicksburg.
And then we ran. Oh, I forgot about Greenwood, Mississippi. We would be in New Orleans on Friday. Thursday night. And then if you didn't go to Lafayette, you would go to Greenwood, Mississippi. And that was a hike from New Orleans. And then when I got back off the road full time, which I did as much wrestling after I got off full time as I did when I was out there, I was flying somewhere every week. And I'd go back out there for him like 4 days a week. And by then he was running, I'd already been to Oregon and to the Carolinas. He was running Houston. He was running Lake Charles.
That's when he had Mid-South.
I don't know why he didn't run Lake Charles when I was out there, you know, full time. He never ran it. God, we wrestled in a gorgeous building there. Lake Charles is a pretty town.
Really?
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah, when the Lee first.
Out that way.
What's that?
Does the circus go out that way?
No, the furthest west we've gone is when I was in Houma last year. That's the furthest west. Normally, until then, we were just in and around New Orleans.
We did
Hammond, Metairie, and Slidell. But we did so well in Houma last year. I'm hoping we go back, and I'm hoping I get to go. Because I found a great Cajun restaurant down there. Holy shit, getting all the weight I've lost back. What's that?
That's down by you, man. I mean, it's down
yes,
in
sir.
There.
Yes, sir. It's a great little area.
Yeah, it is. It's something. But I don't know why he wasn't running Lake Charles when I was there.
I don't know. Lake Charles at one point was, I think it was part of the Dallas office. I know when Lee Fields had Louisiana from 64 to 68, when he first went in there in 64, they were running Lake Charles.
But when they had, when he had it, he had Louisiana. What was he running in Louisiana?
He ran Lake Charles for part of 64, and then by the end of 64, he dropped because it was just too far for them to go. Because he was still pulling a lot of the guys. You know, they were still making shots of Mobile and Panama City and all. I mean, the Gulf Coast Territory one time went from Tallahassee to Lake Charles.
Good Lord.
But when they finally settled down, they ran New Orleans. I think they ran New Orleans monthly, maybe weekly, I'm not sure. They ran Alexandria, they ran LaRanger, Thibodeau,
Lafayette, which was their headquarters, because they did TV out of Lafayette, and that's where the office was. Baton Rouge.
Did they go to Shreveport?
Shreveport, yeah.
Yeah, we ran Alex City, too. I forgot about that. That was a regular town.
Yeah, so they had,
I said it was a big territory. You know, we ran a little.
Yeah, Well, didn't they go into Wichita Falls? Or was that was there. And they went into parts of Missouri, didn't they, with McGirt? Maybe not when you were there, but at one time.
When I was there, no. I think they used to run Joplin.
They did. Joplin, Missouri was one of their towns, yeah.
But when I was there, Joplin wasn't run. Wichita Falls wasn't run. Not when I was there. Not by the office, you know, in Tulsa.
Right.
We ran Little Rock, Fort Smith. Was it Fort Smith? I think it was Fort Smith, Arkansas. Little Rock.
Yeah.
What was it? First night in the territory. I did TV, and I went to, forget the name of that town in Arkansas. That's where you fired Patera the first night in. Good Lord. Patera missed the Thanksgiving shot, and he fired him on the spot. But it was a big territory, I'm telling you. I mean, it took a while for you to get all the way around all the towns, you know. But
I know he put the North American title on you, so did you make even more towns in? Because was that title being used up in Oklahoma?
I nearly every Monday night I was in Tulsa. And then I would always be in Oklahoma City. Those are good wrestling towns. Very good.
I'm surprised you didn't do like Sputnik and tell me you have this belt back. You got to make all
the funniest story I've ever heard. He wants it worse than I do.
You've heard that story, haven't you? You know, they put the
I heard him tell it. We had a good bunch of guys, you know, and it was a fun territory. I mean, of course, you spend a lot of time, you know, on the road, but it was just fun. Everybody got along, worked hard. Some guys you'd only see them, you could go a month and not see some of the guys because, you know, a lot of guys would work down south, like LaRonja, some guys you wouldn't see necessarily in New Orleans, or if you was in Baton Rouge, you'd see them. You know, they'd work the lower end. But
some of the older ones there, what was his name? Dr. X, Red Osborne. Was he around him around?
He was around. You know, I told you the story, nobody would ride with him.
Yeah. Is he from the air conditioner?
No, and the one time, man, it was myself, Brian Blair, and I don't remember who else. I had flown up to Watts treated me good. You know, he did everything he said he would do for me. He said, I'll help you with your trans. I'll fly you, you know, when it's needed. And he did. And I would fly up on Mondays to Tulsa. And then I'd always catch a ride back with somebody. So I had to ride with, it was Brian Blair and who else? I forgot who was it. And his thermostat wasn't working. And so the three of us on this 350-mile trip got to sit in the front seat because it was so cold. Like a bunch of idiots. So we passed Osborne on the interstate. We're about 45 minutes outside of Tulsa. And I'm not kidding you, Mike. It's one of those nights up there. It was like 19 degrees. We passed him. He don't know it's us. He's got the window rolled down and his arm hanging out the window. He was the only one in that car.
I bet.
He was you ever around him?
No. No, he was before my time.
He was different. He was different.
He came into Mobile in 74, 75, something like that, and as Dr. X, and did real well there. He was there probably 4 or 5 months, and he had a program with Baxter as the pro, and then he had a program with Lucas. And
who was he from?
I think he was originally from Tulsa.
Is that right?
Some part of Louisiana. I know for a fact he was from Tulsa. Because
he used
to be known as the Tulsa Terror Jim Osborne early in his career. But he rarely worked for anybody. He worked for Vern for a while when Dick Beyer was doing the Dr. X thing. They brought him in as Double X. And then he started back, he went back to Louisiana or Oklahoma or wherever he was, you know, wherever McGurk was running. And he took the Dr. X gimmick with him down there, and they put the junior belt on him for a while. I think he beat Ramon Torres for the belt. And then I think also back to, what's that?
But when I was there, he wasn't there that long. I don't know if he.
No, he was probably that late in his career. He was probably just doing, you know, shots in and around wherever he was living at the time, you know, filling in. Because he was one of those guys, kind of like him, and there was a handful of guys that McGurk was real loyal to that had worked for him for years. Red McKinn was another one. I don't know if you ever crossed paths with him.
No, I didn't.
And I'm trying to think who else was. There was two or three of them that were, you know, always, and they were around. Tretch Phillips was another one. Tretch Phillips worked for McGurk for years and years after, you know, worked on top in Tennessee in the 50s and early 60s. He kind of wound up out there in Oklahoma and was, you know, working mid-card for McGurk. Alex Perez was another one. Cale Perez, were you ever around him?
Who is that?
Alex Perez. Not the later one, the one that came along in the 90s, but the one that was around in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
No, I didn't know him.
Yeah. He was another one that was out there for quite a bit. Bobby Whitlock ended up out that way refereeing and doing ring announcing and stuff like that. And then I
knew Whitlock when we were in Kansas City. He refereed
Kansas City. Yeah.
Bobby was a good guy. I like Bobby.
Yeah, they used him out there in Oklahoma in a bunch of different things. He was a manager out there for a mass tag team of one of the many Mephisto and Dantes, but this particular version was Joe Turner and Dennis Condrey, who Dennis at the time was Joe's brother-in-law. And
did he ever wrestle much, Bobby?
Who's that?
Whitlock.
Bobby Whitlock? Oh, yeah. Yeah, he wrestled in Mobile territory for years.
I didn't know that.
He was even the Mississippi State champion for about 3 weeks, I think. But, yeah, he worked Mobile, started in the early 60s, and he was in and out, and then in the early 70s, he was there pretty much, you know, for a year or two straight, you know. He and Silento Rodriguez was another one that was a big star in Mobile in the 60s and then came back in the 70s and worked mainly opening match and, you know, mid-card, stuff like that. Whitlock was pretty much the same way.
Well, speaking of Silento, where's he living?
Round Rock, Texas.
Where?
Round Rock, Texas. I think it's near San Antonio. Yeah, I think that's near San Antonio, which is, you know, his wife passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
They came to Mobile for the first time and they got out on the dance floor and danced and had a good time and everything, and then she died the next year, and he hasn't been back.
Well, I'll be dog. He was the noisiest guy in the dressing room I've ever been around. No, really, I'm telling you, man. He raised more sand in the dressing room.
Oh, man. Well, speaking of Joe Turner, I think he's on the line here. Let me get him on the line with you. Were you Mephisto or Dante, Joe? Or do you remember?
I don't remember.
You just got paid, right? So you know something about those Oklahoma trips.
Yeah, I made a lot of them. Was y'all talking about Red Osborne a while ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, a funny thing about him one time, Billy Hand, you know, he always had a drink. And he wasn't supposed to have the dressing room, so what he done, he got some alcohol bottles with different color labels on them, so he knew which one was which. One of them was rubbing alcohol. The other one, he washed out and put his vodka in it. Well, Red Osborne, he called him what was going on. So he, Billy went back there after his match and drugged down some vodka. And Red Osborne saw it. So next thing you know, Red Osborne, while Billy was out there another night, was back there drinking his vodka. So Billy, he caught on and done it another night. So Billy fixed him up. He switched bottles with the labels. And Red Osborne run back in, grabbed it, and turned that bottle up, and he drank some rubbing alcohol. he didn't mess with his vodka anymore, though.
Do you ever ride with him, Joe?
No, I didn't get along with him. You know, he wasn't the friendliest guy in the world.
No, he was strange.
Yeah.
Very strange.
He's,
I don't know if he was always like that or not, but when I was around him, he was.
Yeah, I heard he got out. When he got out of racing business, he went in trucking business and bought a couple of trucks. I don't know. But
I don't know. It seemed like I'd heard that somewhere along the line, too, but I don't know for sure either.
Yeah.
I think he wound up living, even though he was from Tulsa originally, I think he wound up living in Shreveport or somewhere down that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that Tulsa's all right. I liked it pretty good myself. We didn't stay long, but we liked it pretty good.
We were talking about Bobby Whitlock, and I know he was you guys' manager there for a while.
Let me tell you a funny story about him. Whitlock was, we was going We were going to Jackson, Mississippi. That's where we were going. And anyway, from there, we were going to New Orleans. So me and Dennis was telling about it, you know, we get a little wine and drink it. These men come out to see you drinking wine, they think you're wine over, you know. That bothered him. So anyway, we talked him into getting some wine to drink. And we stopped at the store while we were still in Louisiana. And there's a grocery store. You know, they sell a lot of booze in the grocery stores over there or something. We walk all the way to the back, and he asks, now, what's the best wine to get? No, he's trying to make sure nobody sees him buy wine. So anyway, we showed him. He took the bottle and put it on his arm when nobody paid attention to it. He gets all the way up to the checkout counter. It didn't have a price label on it. The girl held it up and hollered out, Mary, how much is this wine? Embarrassed the hell out of him. Anyway, we got to Louisiana with it, and yeah, they got everybody got a little tipsy off that wine. We got in a restaurant down there in New Orleans, right off of Bourbon Street, and then about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and the place is packed full of people. And I told him, I said, shoot, that wine's making me sick. So I got him pulled off the road, and I stuck my finger in my throat to get rid of it. And they said, oh, we ain't going to do that. We got in that restaurant, and it's jam-packed. And Whitlock's sitting there, and I'm sitting there, and we're getting a seafood platter. Dennis Kendrick got one. And Dennis, while he just got through eating that platter full of seafood, and all that would come back up in that restaurant. We sat out in the middle of the floor, probably got 200 people in there eating. And you can hear them forks and knives hitting the table. He filled that platter up, we're off the side and off the table. And everybody quit eating. But we got. Yeah. But well, that's it. Bill was down in, Florida, the Martian, and it's a huge Martian, one of them where all them old people eat. And we out in the middle of it, and Bill hollers out real loud, "There's a roach in my food." Loud as he could holler, you know, and then put a bite of food in his mouth, or nobody fell and picked it with him. It sounded like they were naming Chinese kids, man. And all the farts and knives in the table is. Anyway, old Whitlock, you know, he come back to Biloxi.
Yeah, I knew when he passed away, that's where he was living.
Where was he living?
Biloxi.
Yeah,
he's buried there in Biloxi.
Yeah. He hadn't been there for a couple of weeks. And I'm just thinking to go look him up. But I didn't get a chance to see him. He's fun to be around.
He was a nice guy.
Yeah, he was. But you know what most of the guys were? There's a lot of different personalities, but most of the guys were pretty nice guys. So, at least I always thought most of them pretty nice. How
long yeah, there wasn't many jerks out there. There were a few, but not many.
All the ones that were pretty good at it, too.
Yeah, they were excellent. They hit it down pat.
Yeah, they done their job real well.
I noticed anyway, in my brief time in the career, the heels were always the nice guys outside the ring. There were a few exceptions to that rule, too, but for the most part, they were always the nice ones. And the baby faces, a lot of them believe their own publicity and their own hype. Of course, I came along a generation after you guys did, where the, you know, drugs had a lot to do with people's personalities too. But for the most part, you know, guys like Oxbaker and Stan Hansen, to, you know, look at their ring personas, they were, you know, the meanest things that ever walked the earth. And both of them, I found to be great guys. You know, very nice guys.
You just didn't want to be in a tag team match with Oxbaker, though. The big old gorilla arms he's got hangs down to his knees. And Bill and I, we were in a six-man tag down in Georgia. And he'd take a bump, and me and Bill had to take one, too. He'd knock us off the ring.
That was just Ox.
That was.
He was clumsy from he stepped through the ropes. He just had to get out of his way.
I know it. Yep. But overall, everywhere I went, it's about as pretty nice guys. We're all room here tonight, anyhow.
It's just you and I and Jerry right now. Bobby's sitting there watching the Falcons. I don't know what the score is, but he's down there helping coach the Falcons. Oh, really? Uh-huh. Well, he's happy then.
Yeah. Where's the circus at now?
The circus is still in New Jersey. I'm in Fredericksburg, Virginia. They were at Seaside Heights. I think they're in Oceanside right now. I'm not sure where exactly they are, but they're on the New Jersey coast. And they don't come to me until September.
I don't know if you like history or not, but while you're up there, you get a chance. There's a lot of history there you can go look at.
Yeah, I know. I know that there's the Fredericksburg battlefield is not far from here. Spotsylvania is not far from here. And I don't know how far it is to Manassas, but Manassas I don't think is too terribly far away. So
I was driving one of them back highways up there one day, and I didn't know where I was at. Man, I'm riding on there, and all of a sudden, tanks come out of them woods. They're playing some kind of war game. And I'm not there to have to fight the war tank going on. And the same thing happened going over to the coast in North Carolina territory.
Yeah.
Over there by the military base. I was going through there, and they come out there one time with jeeps and machine guns on them doing war game. I thought I'd have gotten the wrong area. I thought I'd get this covered.
Well, what town are you near, Mike? Where is that in Virginia?
It's not really near anything. I'm 50 miles from south of D.C. and 60 miles north of Richmond.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not really near any big communities. I guess the biggest around here, Fredericksburg, which is where I'm staying, which is where the show's going to be. But like I said, I know Spotsylvania, because I've been over Spotsylvania. It's just down the road, 5-6 miles. It all kind of runs together. But it's a nice little area from what I've managed to see so far. Of course, I've been mainly hitting shopping centers and malls and stuff like that, so I can kind of grassroots about the circus and talk about the circus. And as soon as I get a little further ahead and get some things squared away, I'll have a little bit of time to myself. Hopefully I can hit one of these battlefields one weekend or something and do some touristy stuff.
Oh, did you ever work Fredericksburg? I don't remember ever going there.
No, I never worked there.
I don't remember it at all, you know, going up that way, and I went all over Virginia.
So say, you guys probably didn't go any further north than Richmond.
That's as far as we went.
Yeah.
In the 60s, from D.C. on, belonged to the McMahons. I mean, because that's where they were based in the 60s. They were based in Washington, D.C. until they moved their TV to Pennsylvania, and Vince Sr. retired to Florida, or moved to Florida. I guess he wasn't totally retired, but he had people running things for him. But, I don't think you guys, I don't think Crockett ever ran this far north. They may have, but in spot towns or something. But like I said, it's a ways. It's an hour drive from Richmond. So it really wouldn't have been much of a spot town either. Because most of you guys lived in Charlotte, didn't you, during, when you worked at that territory?
Yeah.
So, Charlotte's probably, 3 or 4 hours. How far is it from Richmond?
300 miles.
So, that's almost 400 miles up this way. So, that wouldn't have been a very good, a profitable spot show, I wouldn't think.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anything about that Richmond. Everybody, when we was at the fairgrounds, we'd leave there, we'd hear gunshots all the time.
Where's that?
In Richmond, when it was at that fairground.
Oh, really?
It
was shooting at you, Joe.
We'd pull out of the plate on the street, and you'd hear people shooting everywhere.
Where was it? Didn't you get your RV shot up one time?
No, I don't think so.
I'm thinking you did, or shot at least.
I might have been shot at. I've been shot at several times.
See what you missed by not being a hill, Jerry?
Exactly.
Especially in Louisiana, where you, because those people in Houma, I'm sure, would have wanted to lynch you had you turned on somebody there. Dundee told me about working when he was booking for Watson, he would work, and they would work in Houma. He said they had a riot just about every time they worked there. But Cajuns,
yeah, Houma, that was something else, man. I tell you, Tulsa and Oklahoma City could get rowdy.
I can imagine so. What were the crowds? I mean, mainly a lot of oil people, like wildcatters.
Where?
In Tulsa and Oklahoma City.
Cowboys.
Cowboys?
Everybody had on cowboy boots and cowboy hats. And what they were, I don't know. I have no idea what they were.
We had an odd mixture of people in Mobile. Speaking of Mobile, Joe, somebody asked me today, somebody sent me an email and wanted to know if I knew of anybody that may have been in attendance at that May show in 1957 where Lee worked with Eduardo Perez at Atlanta Stadium. And I told him only my grandfather I know was there, but he's long gone. And I wasn't sure. Were you there?
Yeah. I wasn't working.
Okay.
I was there.
I knew you weren't working. You were, because, I mean, you had to have been, what, 12 then? Since you're such a young man.
I was back then. I refereed a little bit.
Well, I'll pass this guy's phone number along to you. I'll call you tomorrow, so I'm gonna give you this guy's phone number, and because he's doing another book, and he wants to mention that card. And I wasn't sure if Bill was there. When was Bill in the Marines? I should have asked Bill today when I talked to him, but I'm thinking about it.
I don't know what year that was. I believe it was in around 57.
Well, that's when they had that card, so Bill may not have been there. I'll have to check and ask him. But you two are the only ones I knew that were living in Mobile around that time.
Yeah.
They were still alive, anyway.
It was Lee and who?
Eduardo Perez.
Eduardo Perez.
Yep. They sold out, they sold out half of Ladd Stadium. They had over 10,000 people there. It was a tournament
really?
That named the very first Gulf Coast champion, and they awarded a Cadillac. You know, the Fullers love to have those Cadillac tournaments everywhere. And then Buddy Fuller was a promoter here then, or in Mobile then. And it came down, and everybody just knew Lee was going to win, so they swerved it and had Eduardo Perez win. I think he wound up selling that Cadillac to Dick Dunn, somebody told me. But they drew 10,000 people, and at that time, the population of Mobile may have been 40, 50,000 people. So that's a hell of a crowd to draw.
That is something. And that was in 57?
1957, May 18th, 1957.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking it was, in around 57. I rode with Eduardo Perez one time. I wouldn't ride with him anymore. He's a good dresser, and when he'd get in the car to make a trip, he'd stand out there in the middle of the street and take his pants off, fold them up, and put them across the back of the seat. He'd ride my own his underwear. So I could ride with him. And he don't have any pants on.
Well, the best Eduardo Perez story I've ever heard was a rib that Rip Tyler and Eddie Sullivan pulled on him. Joe, you probably heard this. This was back in the early 70s when metal detectors were real popular. And they convinced him to buy a metal detector that he could find all kind of stuff. So I think they were going to Pensacola TV or coming back from Pensacola TV, but they had already gone ahead and buried some stuff. And then they sucked the road and convinced Eduardo Perez to get out and use one of their metal detectors, and he found all that stuff that they had already pre-hidden, and he just went wild. He bought a metal detector, and that's all he did.
Oh, didn't find anything else, right?
Probably not.
Yeah, y'all going way back.
Yeah, but I'll pass your information. I can't remember if it was Greg Oliver and Steve Johnson that sent me an email, but I'll tell them that you were there.
That had been some kind of record for a house in 52, didn't it?
57. Yeah, it was. The only other time they had, they did over 10,000 there one other time. They had
tag team match.
Well, the one I'm thinking was Lee and Don Fields against the Fargos.
Oh, okay.
They had another one that was over 10,000. That was the next year. I don't know if Mario ever – I'm sure he did. I'm sure Mario worked last day. And they didn't run that place that many times, maybe half a dozen times the late 50s.
A football field?
Yeah.
They sold
one side of it.
Well, Reed, I remember Mario Glinto. He jumped out of the ring and ran up in them stands, and you know they were segregated back then. And he ran up in them stands, and Bud, he cleared that whole half of that football stadium out. Come up there, he acted so crazy, they all ran from him.
Are you sure that wasn't Hartwell Field? You know, because Hartwell Field had stands too. Back in those days.
Oh, it's over there at Ladd Stadium.
I'll have to look that up and see if I can find that. I know they, like I said, they had a handful of cards. The last one in the early 60s, 60 or 61, Buddy Fuller came back in and tried to run opposition to Lee, and he booked a card on, see, Mobile was running on Wednesday nights back then. He booked a card on Tuesday nights at, or Tuesday night at Ladd Stadium, and he had the Medics, he had the Fargos, he had the Kozaks, he had all these people advertised. And most of them had been working for, Poncho Villa was on that card. Most of them had been working for Lee, you know, just within the last few weeks. And all of a sudden they showed up being advertised on this, but I don't think the card ever happened because I never found any results for it ever happening. So I don't know what the deal was. But, you know, that family was always pulling something, pretending to run opposition against each other just to pull some sort of something. Lee ran up in Nashville twice, in 67 and in 71, I think it was. He ran opposition to Gulas in Nashville, and all that was set up by Roy Welch, who was Gulas' partner and Lee's uncle.
Did they actually run it?
Yeah, but it was a one-shot thing, but it was enough to scare Gulas into thinking that they were coming in and run opposition. So he and Roy probably had some sort of beef going on, and it scared Gulas enough to do whatever Roy wanted him to do. I've heard about the Welch clan would curl your toes. Joe and Bill have told me most of them.
And they're all true.
They were like, oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. You know, they had their hands in the business for a lot of years. One branch or another of them did. From Roy in the 30s and 40s into the 70s, all the way through Fuller into the 80s, late 80s.
Nick Gulas, before he died, he called me up. I was running Selma and Tuscaloosa on my own. And he called me up one day, hey, boy. He said, then when you get together, I'll send you boys and all. He said, we'll make a lot of money. I said, yeah, I've heard that before, Nick. As far as I went with that one, I wouldn't have teamed up with him if an attorney filled out the papers. Because there'd be something happening.
Oh, yeah. The attorney be related to
him. Yeah, that's it. There'd be something going on. But,
well, you know, Rip, when Rip was running WOW in 87, when it was he was running 87, at the very tail end of that, he was trying to run shows up in Tennessee in conjunction with Gulas. I don't know. I don't think it lasted very long. You'd think Rip would know better, because I know Rip worked for him and booked for him at one time. Rip ran his own towns in Mississippi for Gulas back in his early career. But...
In Lee Fields' early days, did he run Montgomery and all up in there, that part of Alabama?
No.
They
ran Montgomery a handful of times in the late 60s before Billy Golden started running there. But Lee never went any further north. In Alabama, he other than spot shows up around Mount Vernon and places like that, Mobile was the only town in Alabama that he ran.
Gulas was running Birmingham, right?
Yeah, Gulas was running Birmingham. And there in the 70s, Billy Golden had Montgomery, he had Tuscaloosa, he had Talladega, Gadsden, places like that, right there across the middle. Well, you know, because you worked there. Both of you guys worked there for him. That was kind of that was in conjunction with Gulas somehow or another. It was because he used a lot of Gulas' guys, and I know Dennis Hall booked there one time, Buddy Wayne booked there one time. Joe, did you ever book there for Golden?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
I said, did you ever have the book for Golden, or did you book later on after you had your own deal?
I had to have my own deal.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, what happened, the guy that done the TV announcement from the TV station,
mm-hmm.
When they shut that down over there, somebody gave him a ring, and he started running some and all. Well, he got over there, and we worked for him some, the guys that live there. And anyway, he told me, he said, man, I had enough of this stuff. He says, how about you taking it over? And I said, man, I don't want to buy this ring. He said, you don't have to buy it. He said, you can have the ring, too. He just wanted to get out of it. But well, I mean, we had some good times there.
When did you run it?
Where did I run?
When?
Oh, I don't even remember the years now. But I was living in Montgomery, and I'd worked for Bill Golden. So
you just did you run the whole thing like he did?
No, I didn't run the whole thing. All I ran was Selma and Tuscaloosa. I had TV at both of them. A tape going in there.
Right.
And see, Fuller and them come in there, and I was actually getting a tape from them. They let me borrow the tape, and I was using the job guys that was working for me. They'd go over and do jobs for them, and they'd be on the tape, and then I'd draw money for them. It's done pretty good for a while. I have some good hands there. At Tuscaloosa was tough, but some would do pretty good. We had I can't think of his name now. He lifted weights, had big arms and all, and maybe his name will pop up in a minute. But I had him over at TV doing the interview one day, and he wanted to bring his weights and lift weights and show how much he could pick up and all that, and then talk about what he could do to his opponent. So, like, the interviews were, like, between 2 and 3 o'clock at the TV station. And so when we leave there, we had to kill time, so we went to a restaurant to eat. When we got to the restaurant to eat, he got some Heinz 57 stuff, and he's sitting there, and that whole place was packed full of people, and they're all staring at us. And he reaches over and gets that Heinz 57 sauce, and he couldn't get the lid off of it. He's twisting and making all that contortions there. And finally, I told him, man, give me that thing. And he said, no, I'm going to get it. I said, no, give it to me, man. I said, you just picked up 400 pounds, you can't even open a bottle lid. Give it here. If you watch that TV there, you know, they had a steakhouse way back up in the woods there, and they had a little old beach there called Miami Beach, Little Miami. And we got on there one time, and I made an interview talking about what I was going to do, and I was working some then. And anyway, I told them what all I was going to do, and I said, when I get off this TV, I'm going over to this here steakhouse down there and eat me a big old steak. And we come back by Little Miami Beach, and we can lay out there and get some sun. We got down in that steakhouse. We couldn't even hardly find a parking place. We got in there, and we had to wait for a seat. So we got there and ordered our food, and when we got it, we got ready to leave. They wouldn't let us pay for it. And I said, wait a minute. You run a business, and you're not going to let us pay for our food? He said, no, we ain't never had a crowd half this big before. He said, heard you on TV, and they all showed up. We helped them out pretty good that time. But, you know, so many promoters messing TVs up, it's hard to get them TVs. You go try to book them.
Lars Anderson Dick Steinborn was involved for a short while, but they ran out of Tuscaloosa. I don't know if they ever had TV or not.
Yeah.
Out of there.
Well, Tuscaloosa, most of what we did over there just to make interviews all the time. We didn't have a live show there. But it's But, you know, we'd done the film. We took that film and just took it over there. We wrote we bicycled it around.
Yeah.
See, Steinbar and them, when Fuller and them come in there, they'd let me use their tape, but what their plan was is get their boys over and they're just going to walk in and take that thing. But it didn't work. Steinbar went over there and talked to the guy at National Guard Armory and for them, you know, not for himself. But
right.
Fuller and them. And the National Guard Army told me, said, that guy come over here talking to us about that. Says we told him we wasn't interested in nothing. So they didn't let him have it. But you know how Fuller and them are. They'd take it if they could.
Yeah, they didn't expand. I know they tried to expand because he bought, it was after he sold Knoxville to Barnett. And they were just strictly running Mobile because, you know, for a year or so there, Fuller was running Knoxville and Mobile. And he was swapping crews back and forth. But then Knoxville started to go down, so they ended up selling it to Barnett, who sold it to Flair and Mulligan. And it didn't last long there. But he started, when he did that, he bought Birmingham, Montgomery, Tuscaloosa, Huntsville. He started trying to run up North Alabama, but then he just pared it back and only kept Montgomery. He dropped all the towns but Montgomery and Birmingham. And that's where I worked for him. They were running Pensacola on Sunday, Birmingham Monday, Tuesday was Mobile, Wednesday was Montgomery. Thursday was an off day. Friday was a spot show. Saturday was Dothan TV and Dothan House Show.
Why didn't Mulligan and Flair do anything with Knoxville? It was already
done.
I don't know
if they couldn't draw anybody or what the deal was. I don't even know who they tried to use. I think they tried to use a mix of Georgia guys and Crockett guys. And, I mean, they had guys that people were familiar with. I know Kevin Sullivan worked for them. I'm not sure who all else they worked, how they worked that out. But I don't know. I know Barnett supposedly sold it to them, but I have my gut feeling is Crockett's money was involved in that more than, because I can't imagine where Flair and Mulligan would have gotten the money to buy it, but you never know.
Is that Blackjack Mulligan?
Yeah.
It was?
Yeah, he and Flair had Knoxville. They had, I want to say they were even running Chattanooga before Georgia started running Chattanooga. I think Georgia started running Chattanooga in 80 or 81 as part of their expansion when they were going into, West Virginia and Columbus, Ohio, and places like that. They were running Chattanooga on Saturday nights because that's where I worked for them up there a couple of times.
Yeah, you get up there in Kentucky, Virginia, West Virginia and all, where they make all that moonshine. They'll fight you. And me and, I can't even think of his name now, y'all talking about him a while ago. But him and I were partners up there one time in one of them backwoods towns up in them hills. And when we left the dressing room, there was a bunch of guys come up beside us there and say, "How y'all doing?" We walk into the ring, and we're doing fine. It's a big auditorium, and they're doing fine. They said, "We just want to let you know, whoever wins this match is going to have to fight us." I said, "Oh, really?" So anyway, we turned up, went back to the dressing room, and got some of them old dog and choke chains put down our trunk. So sure enough, they're man of their word. When we come out of that ring, they was ready to go. But we come out with them chains, we ran them all the way across there at the other end up them bleachers. And man, them guys serious up through some of them places.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's Dickie Steinborn one time when he was up in Kentucky town. And anyway, there was a little balcony up there. And I think it's in that town where Colonel Sanders from. But anyway, it's an old wooden building, but it had a little balcony in it and all. And Steinborn's out there working, and I forgot who he's working with, but there's a guy on the balcony. He was jumping up and down, getting excited. He had a coat on, but he had a pistol and a shoulder holster up under him. Steinborn told that policeman, because the guy was getting hot up, he said, "Hey, man, that guy's got a pistol up there." And he looked up there and he said, "Oh, that's Harry. Don't worry about him. If he wants to shoot you, he's already done it." I was one of the last ones leaving one night, and I walked out there and had a like a stevedore door, old wooden door. And I walked out that thing, and there's four or five guys standing over there. And when I stepped out the door, they all turned around and started shooting at me. And I shut the door back. I just stayed in there for about another hour, and they left. So I left too. Wild places up there.
I'm glad they just protest at the circus. They don't bring pistols and shoot at us.
Yeah, there was some dangerous towns in the day.
It sure was, wasn't it? Oh.
There was some dangerous towns.
You know, Hattiesburg over there was pretty bad.
Yeah, Hattiesburg, it was. It really was.
Yeah.
Is that where you got the death threat? Joe, was that Hattiesburg or Pensacola you got the death threat? It was Hattiesburg, wasn't it?
Meridian.
Meridian, okay.
And was it left a note in the dressing room?
Yeah.
Yeah. but it's, Hattiesburg, me and Billy Spears and somebody else, we were the last ones getting dressed, and we're leaking. And we parked down this little alley. I was in my car. And we parked down on beside the building back up in there. It wasn't really an alley, but, it, you know, to get back up in there where they had a lot of stuff during the fair or circus. But anyways, we're walking out there, and look out there, and there's a whole gang of guys out there. There must have been about a dozen of them. And I don't know where they got them rocks from. They look like bowling balls when they start throwing them. And here they come toward us. And here we are. So anyway, they weren't slowing down no matter what we did. They were coming on. And so Spear said, "What are we going to do?" And I said, "Don't let them know you're scared. You know, I said, just keep walking like you could beat the hell out of them. And I'll try to scare them a little bit." And I pulled out a pistol and shot over the head. And they still didn't turn around and run. So Spear said, "What's going on, man? What's going to happen now?" And I said, "Get the ringleader and beat the hell out of him. Let's go." And we did, and the rest of them left. And he left, we could get up off the ground. But there's a lot of places like that around. That's the same town where I walked underneath. You remember the bleachers, how they were there? And you had to walk under the opening in them to get to the dressing room? On that one
day. Never went to Meridian. Did you work there, Jerry? You worked Meridian.
Yes,
you were
yes.
There.
Oh, this is Hattiesburg.
Oh, Hattiesburg. Yeah, and I remember what Hattiesburg looked like.
Anyway, I walked under, and I don't know where this guy, how he got a 2x8 in there, but he hit me over the head with that thing. And my head didn't, that boy didn't give it all.
Did you sell it?
Hell yeah. I didn't hit the ground nothing. I kept moving because I didn't want him to get me again. I got in the dressing room, but I was selling it. You know, I'll tell you what, the first one that got me one time, and which I'll never forget, we was in Atmore, Alabama, and we had a lot of heat. We tried to get to the dressing room, and there's an old man standing up there. Dressed real nice and all, and he just, he didn't look like he'd get wild at all, but, man, he's so excited and so nervous, he just shaking. And he had his shoe off, and he'd go hit me with it, with the heel of it. And I couldn't get past him, get in the dressing room door, so I said, "Man, go ahead and hit me and get it out of your system." As you ever hit me with that heel, And for 2 weeks, I could read Caspar on my chest and count the nail holes. Uh-oh, Joker's long, that boot shoe. That's where Chico Cortez, you know, Speedy Hatfield, is always ribbing each other. So Chico was there selling pictures, and somebody didn't show up. So Speedy told him, he said, "Man, won't you work?" Said we're short. Can you get up there and work? He said, "Yeah, I can do it." And he said, "I know you." Speedy tells him, "I know you're getting old and you can't get no heat." He said, "I can get everyone in chairs up in the ring." Speedy said, "Yeah." Well, sure enough, he did. Every one of them chairs in the ring, there wasn't one left on the floor. They piled up to your shoulders. You can't mess
I never
with
got to see Chico work.
I'm going to tell you what, Chico.
Yeah, I've heard plenty of stories about him. I never got to see him work, but
they're all true. They're all true. Believe me. He'd ride with him, and if you, he'd love to get his beer. And if you can stop getting him a six pack, he'd stop get his suitcase out, and he'd hitchhike the rest of the way home, and he'd go get a six pack. I think he was in Dothan. They went in there, and they didn't have any money. And he told this old lady in the store, he's in my van, says, "We out of money, and we're hungry," and put a story on it. It made her feel sorry for him. So he went back there and got a few things to make a sandwich with and a case of beer. I could picture him getting that beer and getting out that door and not having to pay for it. But Chico's
see,
all right.
Dear, if you'd have had Chico selling your T-shirts in Kansas City, you'd have made a fortune.
I'd have done a little bit better, wouldn't I? Couldn't have done any worse.
Oh, we used to. Oh, Chico, you know, we had a deal going with him, and he'd be selling pictures of somebody that when we was heels. He'd be selling pictures of some baby face, and he'd come by the ring holding them up, and he'd look at you and kind of smile. And we knew what he wanted. We'd grab one of them pictures and tear it up and throw it at him. Man, he'd sell the heck out of them pictures.
That's what Charlie Smith used to do. He'd sell pictures and tell people, he'd get on the microphone and tell people, "Don't you dare tear up my pictures." And he'd sell out of them so they could buy them and tear them up.
I know you think about that's in Alabama. We were standing there by the dressing room and Bill didn't like, if we was a heel, he didn't like to sign autographs. He thought that was a good thing, you know. But anyway, we're standing over there. Here come a guy. He looked like he's taller than Andre the Giant, big shoulders, and he had to bend way over to hold his little girl's hand. And Bill just told a bunch of kids in there, "I ain't signing no autographs." So anyway, he's holding his little girl's hand, and he always said, "Mister, I'd like you to sign my little girl's autograph." Bill looked up and down at him. He said, "Okay." He got that pin on his back.
You think so?
What's that noise?
I don't know. I was thinking that was you.
That was
well, guys, I'm gonna wrap it up early tonight, and we'll be back next week. Joe, I appreciate you joining us. As always, your stories are always fascinating. Hopefully by this time next week, Bill will be out of the hospital, and maybe we'll get you both on. Next week, I want to talk about what I had planned to talk about last week when the NSA shut us down. And we touched on it a lot here tonight, and that's the fans in different areas, how different fans reacted to you guys. And I know, you know, most towns back in those days had a lot of the same fans that's at ringside, and you know, just talk about some of the memorable ones that we remember and everything, and maybe we'll get to have you and Bill join us and tell some stories, and we'll Bobby will be back with us. I know he's got some stories to tell about fans chewing him out and talking to him.
He may be in some kind of funk. He may be in some kind of funk next week. The Falcons are getting beat tonight, so
oh, he'll have a week to get over it, though. So,
we leave. Let me tell you something. A guy told me today.
What's that?
He's real. This real old guy. Him and his wife are laying in bed. And they're real old, and he reached back behind him, and he's patting on the leg and rubbing her leg and patting on the hip, patting on the arm and the shoulder, and just kept on patting her all over. And finally he stopped. And she asked him, she said, what'd you quit for? He said, I found the remote.
That's all he was looking for.
He was looking for.
Like the man that came home and climbed in bed and took his foot and pushed his wife out on the floor. She said, she said, what was that for? And he said, being a lousy lover. She got back in bed and pushed him out, and he fell on the floor and said, what was that for? And she said, for knowing the difference. All right, guys, well, we're going to wrap it up. Joe, thanks again for joining us. Jerry, I appreciate it. And we'll get together next week, and we'll do this again.
Y'all have a great weekend.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
All right, good talking to y'all, man. See you.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
We thank you for listening to the Tribecast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.